The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
Well, good afternoon, Bay Area. It is good to be back on the air this week. I had a show rebroadcast last Monday because I was being afflicted with very, very severe recurring coughing. I had been kind of ill, and I still have some of that cough here, and I may actually have a couple of coughs during the show. But I have been assured by my engineer today that he's put the delay on the show. So if I cough, he can dump that so it doesn't. Yeah, exactly. He can dump that so it doesn't inflict itself on your listening ears. So today, I think I'm going to focus my show on questions and comments from around the state of California. But I also wanted to let everybody know out there that I have added a new version of my estate planning webinar that could be accessed through my website at lawbob.com /webinars. And what I've done is I've added a living trust webinar that is directed at individuals. My main living trust webinar talks primarily about married couples and planning for them, but my new one focuses on individuals, and that includes people who are unmarried, who are widowed, who are divorced, but it also includes unmarried couples where planning has to be done individually by each partner, which, by the way, includes registered domestic partners here in the state of California. Planning has to be done separately for them. And then also if someone's married but has separate property, separate assets that are separate from the marriage, then this is a webinar that's for you as well, talking about how to do planning if you are an individual as opposed to a married couple. So, I did this as a suggestion from someone that came to one of my live seminars and said, gee, it seemed to be all about married couples. And I go, well, yes, most planning opportunities are available to married couples, many of which are not available to those who are unmarried. But still, I reworked my webinar with an emphasis on individuals. So you can now go to my website if you are unmarried or planning for your separate property in a marriage, and you can watch that webinar, the Living Trust webinar for individuals. Okay? Sounds good? Sounds good. Also, you can feel free, if you'd like, to email to me at rpb@lawbob.com, or you can also call my office if you wanted to leave a message or try to talk with me if I can pick up the phone. 408-247-0444. Now is not the time to call because I'm on the air right now. After 3 o'clock today, I'm gone for the rest of the day because I go to pick my children up at school. They get out at 3. I get out just before 3, and then I have to drive over and pick them up and take them home. So, but you can always call any time of the day or night. You can leave a message for me, or you can email me at rpb@lawbob.com if you have questions or if you have an inquiry of some kind. And hopefully I can put you on the path to doing an estate plan and getting your planning done. So let me dive in. I have a whole stack of questions and comments from around the state of California, and some of them are actually pretty darn good. So let's see what we've got here. All right. From Spartsville, California. That's an actual place, I guess. I've never heard of Spartsville, California. Sounds like it's up north somewhere, but I don't really know. I'll have to look that up later. Someone said or asked, can an executor, that's the person put in charge of an estate through a probate, pay an inheritance straight into a beneficiary's trust when a court order only has the beneficiary's name? The court has already issued the order for final distribution. Distribution is to go to named beneficiaries. The beneficiaries want the money set by bank wire into accounts belonging to their living trust and another, a special needs trust set up for their son. Is this something the executor can do? Neither the will nor the court order says anything about the trust. My response is, not really. If it says it's to be distributed to the named beneficiaries, it has to be distributed to the named beneficiaries. Once they get it, they can then put it wherever they want. They can put it into their living trust. I'm assuming that this distribution to the special needs trust set up for their son, they just want to have some of the money going in there. Well, the probate executor doesn't have authority to make distributions in any other direction than what the court order actually indicates. To do so would likely be a violation of the trust and estates law, the probate law, and could subject the executor to some serious issues if they decide to pursue that. So my short answer is no. Now, here out of Visalia, California, I've heard of Visalia. I've been to Visalia. One of my siblings is bedbound and nonverbal, but able to answer questions by nodding, writing, and sign language. I've recently become their caregiver. When I take the sibling to the doctor or have phone appointments, they will not let me speak for him and told me I need power of attorney. How can I get one, or what steps do I need to take? Well, it sounds like if we're talking about medical issues, this sibling needs to execute an advance health care directive with immediate authority. And if the person can communicate by nodding yes or no, and very importantly, by writing, then someone could prepare, could bring an advance health care directive document to them, the statutory form, for example, ask them questions, would you like this, yes or no? Or the person can write in themselves what they want. And then as long as they have ID, like a picture ID that's current, they could sign that advance directive and have it notarized. And now you have given authority to someone to speak for you. So that would be the direct way to do that. The statutory form advance healthcare directive can be found online. If you do a search for statutory form advance healthcare directive, and that would be a quick way to actually get that authority. So this person can start actually talking with the doctors and make appointments and everything because they have that immediate authority under an advance healthcare directive. Now here, from Rancho Cucamonga, California. Yes, person says, I have a living trust that leaves everything I own to my wife, including my house that is valued at $700,000. Will she be taxed as capital gains for the extra real property that she inherits from me? The answer is no. Because if the property, in fact, is owned by you and you leave it to your spouse, they receive what's called a new step up in the cost basis of the property to the market value on the date you died. That means that your spouse is treated as if they had just purchased that property for the current value, which means their acquisition cost is the value it was that on the date you died, which means if they turn around and sell it, they don't pay capital gains tax, and they can hold on to it too and pass it on to someone else later. So we're coming up on the first break of the show today. When we come back, there will be more Plan Your Estate Radio. I'm your host, estate planning attorney Bob Bergman, and I'm looking forward to sharing more with you after the break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose estate planning attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back. So before the break, I was sharing some questions and comments from around the state of California. So I'm going to continue on here in the second half of the show today. I mean the second half of the first half. It's not exactly half, but it's close enough. So out of Los Angeles, California, City of the Angels. If an owner of a business passes and the owner owed money to other companies and clients and the business ceases to operate on his death, is his estate responsible for those debts from his own company? Well, certainly if it was a sole proprietorship or a partnership or something like that, the answer is yes. If the business was a corporation and there was no signing by the owner of the business, wasn't signing personally for debts or things like that, then not the estate's not really responsible for those debts, but the corporation would be responsible for those debts. The corollary question is, if the value of the debt exceeds the value of the assets in the estate, can the beneficiaries of the estate be liable for those obligations? The answer is no. You can only be obligated if you're inheriting to the extent that you receive money from the estate. And in a case like that, if there were in fact obligations that exceeded assets, I might even advise the family to just walk away, to just not even probate that estate if they knew for a fact that there was $1 million in debts and the person had $500,000 in the bank. Don't even get started, because if you do that, you're going to incur costs, filing fees and attorney's fees and everything else to probate an estate where there is no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. No pot of gold for the simple fact that there's just no money. There will be no money to distribute at the end. I had something like that happen a number of years ago when a friend of mine came to me and told me that his father had passed. And after sharing how sorry I was to hear that, he said, well, here's the deal. My dad owned a house up in the East San Francisco Bay Area, and the house is underwater. Now, in parlance, that doesn't mean it was literally under the water, like it was flooded. It was underwater financially, meaning that he owed more on the house than the house was worth. And the only other things his father had was some crummy old furniture in the house. There were no bank accounts, no brokerage accounts, no other monies of any kind. So I told my friend, the best thing you can do, if you want to be nice, contact your father's creditors, contact the bank, let them know your father died, and you and your sister are not going to be doing anything at all. I mean, I don't have to file probate. I said, don't file probate. Then you're just going to incur fees and costs with no money there to pay those fees and costs and nothing coming to you and your sister. If you just walk away, then the lender if they want anything, they're going to have to start foreclosure on the loan on your father's house, and eventually they will take over the house, and they'll probably end up losing money on the deal because the house is worth less than what they were owed. But you want to stay out of it. Don't even get involved in it. I know it kind of goes against the instinct to say, oh, but you have to have a probate. No, you don't. If there's not going to be any money at the end, and you know that because you know what is owed and you know what's owned, then you're better off not starting in the first place. Now, don't just do that without consulting with an estate planning attorney first to see if that makes sense. But in some cases, like in the one I just related on the air here, in the case of my friend from a number of years ago, that was the appropriate thing to do. Nothing at all. Okay, let's see. Do I want to deal with that one? We'll stay away from that one. Another one out of Los Angeles. Person said, someone removed my mother's trust from her home, her trust that she amended in 2021. My question is, since the trust involves real estate, would a true copy be filed with the county recorder's office? The short answer is probably not. Living trusts are not intended to be filed anywhere unless sometimes you have to file them in the probate court because you're trying to do something in reference to that trust. But you don't record your trust with the county recorder's office, even if it owns real estate. The bigger question is, it sounds like the person saying, I don't have a copy of my mother's trust because someone stole it from her home. Well, then the question becomes, do you have any information about who prepared it, where it was prepared? If you know who prepared it, you might be able to get a copy from them if your mother has died and you're one of the beneficiaries, or you're the person who's supposed to be in charge of things, known as the successor trustee. But other than that, there's no real way that you can find out whether there was a trust at all or where one might be. I do have one way, however. If there was property transferred into the trust when it was set up, look at a copy of the deed. The deed might indicate who prepared the deed and who requested it be recorded. For example, the deeds that I do have at the top, they say, recorded at the request of Robert P. Bergman, attorney at law. Then I have the information about the client, the deed itself, and then I've typically notarized the document as well. So my name appears at the end as the notary. That can be a clue as to who prepared the estate plan, which means that's who you should go first to see about getting a copy of the plan if the person's died. Showing that the person's died, they can look at their papers and say, oh, you're the successor trustee, and then they will probably start working with you in order to clear things up, to clear the estate up. So that's the best thing I can think of right there for trying to figure out just how you can get a copy of the trust. That's where I'd say always start. If you know there's real estate, look at the documents recorded in reference to the real estate to see if it was transferred into the trust. And sometimes the attorney information will appear on those deeds. So we're coming up to the end of the first segment of the show today, first half of the show. When we come back, I will pick up with more questions and comments from around this state of California. And I hope you stay tuned. There's some interesting stuff coming up. This is estate planning attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio. And I'll see you on the other side of the break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose estate planning attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
Hi, welcome back to the third segment of the show today. Okay, out of port, and I don't know how to pronounce this. Huneme? H-U-E-Wainimi? Wainimi. Oh, okay, my engineer told me it's Wainimi. He said he used to live there. Wainimi sounds like it should be on the Big Island. That's what it sounds like. Port Wainimi. Person said, my husband's sister passed away intestate. There are no other potential beneficiaries aside from my husband. Husband's sister? Okay. Well, then that would be, he'd be the parents are deceased. She never married, was in a partnership or had children, no other siblings. And said, my husband and I have been paying all of her bills, property taxes, utilities, and homeowners association out of pocket just to keep things moving along with no late fees. We are in a position to keep paying those bills until probate has concluded. Do we need to open an estate account for her if we do not expect to deal with estate taxes? Okay. An estate account for a probate has nothing to do with estate taxes. Estate taxes are federal taxes on the transfer of wealth. The fact that someone doesn't have a taxable estate for estate tax purposes has nothing to do with whether there should be an estate account, meaning a bank account for the estate. If there is income coming in to the sister's estate, if the sister had bank accounts, brokerage accounts, things like that, if they're going to sell this property and bring money into the estate as opposed to distribute it out of the estate and then sell it, have the husband sell it later, that means there needs to be some place for the cash in the estate to sit. It can't stay in the sister's name because her Social Security number doesn't work anymore because she passed away. So if there's going to be cash brought into the estate, or if there's cash in the estate now, or if you're going to sell something in the estate and convert it to cash, there should be at least a bank account in the name of the estate with, I guess here, with the husband, who's the brother, as the administrator of the estate, because it says the sister died intestate, meaning she had no last will and testament. So an estate account is where you gather together the cash in someone's probate estate, and it literally has nothing to do with estate taxes. Estate taxes are a completely different issue. Okay, out of Palm Desert, California, someone says, my mother, who is 97 years of age, is totally incapacitated with Alzheimer's and in a nursing home. I am her only heir and beneficiary. I would like to withdraw funds from her revocable trust, which are in a regular savings account now, and put the funds into a CD, a certificate of deposit. The trust states that trustor reserves the right to withdraw assets. I have her power of attorney, her financial power of attorney. I'm the successor trustee of the trust, and I handle all her affairs, financial, medical, everything. Please advise if I'm able to proceed with this. Thank you. Okay. If there is money in the trust in a savings account and this person is the now serving trustee, a trust will typically give someone the ability to invest the assets of the trust in an appropriate way. I would think it's perfectly appropriate to create a CD, and you wouldn't have to take money out of the trust, especially if the CD is at the same place, the same bank where the savings account is. Create the CD and direct them to transfer the funds from the savings account into the certificate of deposit. Make sure everything is in the trust name from start to finish. And you're not really withdrawing assets from the trust. You're just repositioning the assets from one investment to another investment. So that's that would be perfectly fine. And I'm assuming that the trust does have the authority to invest assets in it, because that's really the authority we're talking about there. Has nothing to do with the financial power of attorney. Has to do with what authority does the trustee have in the trust. Okay, that one didn't make sense. Oh, okay. Someone sending out the notification by trustee to the beneficiaries of the trust. Now, this is Probate Code Section 16061.7, where the beneficiaries of a trust are notified by the trustee that the person has died, where the place of administration of the trust is, and typically also provides a copy of the trust to all those people so that they have a certain amount of time if they want to go to court and complain. If they don't do it in the time prescribed by law, then they're not allowed to do it later on. And the person wants to know, what do I put in the section where it says principal place of administration of the trust? Well, the short answer is, wherever the trustee lives is presumed to be the principal place of administration of the trust. So the trustee would put their name, their address, and their telephone number in there to let everybody know if you have questions about the trust and everything, this is where to contact me, this is where to write me, this is where to call me, because that's where the trust is being administered. So that's pretty much answering that question right there. Now, out of Sacramento, California, someone said, I have an uncle in Florida that passed away. I'll start first by saying I do not practice law in the state of Florida, but this is not specifically a Florida question. It says, my uncle's niece, my cousin, is the executor of the probate. I haven't received a copy of his will, but I did receive a letter asking me to sign a petition for administration, petition to waive bond of personal representative. Is this a good thing? Well, let's say on the positive side, if you sign that, your cousin will not have to post a bond, what's called a surety bond, in order to handle your uncle's estate. That could save, depending on the size of the estate, that could save a few hundred to several thousand dollars in expenses that are going to come off the top of your uncle's estate before things get distributed. So the real question I would ask is, do you trust your cousin to be above board, do everything fairly, not do any sneaky stuff, not try to embezzle from your uncle's estate, all those kinds of things? And I would say, do you trust your cousin? Would you trust your cousin with the keys to your house, the keys to your car, the combination to your safe at home, the pins on your bank accounts online, all those kinds of things? If you don't trust your cousin one bit, you should not sign a waiver of bond. Because with a bond put up, if your cousin plays fast and loose with everything, you have some recourse to collect any money that was embezzled or things like that if there's in fact a bond that's put up. So downside, bonds cost money. If there's no need for a bond because everybody trusts everybody and they are in fact trustworthy, then signing a petition to waive the bond. When I do probates, a lot of times the people do waive the bond because it's, you know, everything's being handled by one of the siblings. They all get along really well. They all trust each other. And it's just another way to save. Sometimes the will actually provides in it that there is a bond is to be waived That being said, some courts still require, even if that's in the will, some courts require the beneficiaries to waive the bond as well. I'm not sure what the point is, but they just want to make darn sure, I guess, that people actually are in agreement with that when they actually go ahead and grant authority to start handling the estate. My parent wants to create a new will to change beneficiaries, but has had their springing durable power of attorney for financial matters activated, and it is currently in effect. Can she make a new will or change her beneficiaries? The answer is, if she's legally competent to do so, she can absolutely make a new will and change her beneficiaries. Just because she gave a financial power of attorney to somebody so they could start acting for her and do things for her doesn't mean she's given up the right to do things for herself, including making a new will to change her beneficiaries. Okay, so we're coming up on the end of this third segment of the show today. And when we come back, I'll wrap up the show with a few more questions and comments, and then we'll be done for the day and you can go about the rest of your business. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and we'll finish up the show in a few minutes.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with Attorney Bob Bergman.
Hey, welcome back for the final segment of the show today. Okay, this is an interesting one out of Riverbank, California. Not sure if they do river dance there, but maybe they do. So here, can a family tell someone they know, consider yourself part of our family, and really mean it, and have that person become related? Is this legal? Well, it's about as legal as the Artful Dodger telling Oliver, consider yourself at home, consider yourself part of the family. That did not make Oliver related to the Artful Dodger or Fagin or any of Fagin's boys in Oliver. It literally means nothing at all. It's nice. It's nice. Consider yourself. You come by, you have a place to stay. You're welcome to come over for dinner and all this, but it doesn't legally make you part of the family, as in someone who has inheritance rights or anything like that. Now, that being said, there are many families out there where people have kind of surrounded themselves with people that are very important to them that they consider to be their family. And you know how you make that legal? You do estate planning that identifies those people as the people you want to leave your property to. I call it adoption by will or adoption by trust. And it's not unusual in my practice to have people say, okay, well, I'm leaving this to my children, but over here is my nephew that I raised since he was little. And I never adopted him, but I consider him to be like my son. Okay, well then in your trust or your will, you can say, this is Joe Smith, who's my nephew. I want him treated for all purposes in this estate plan as if he were my child. Adoption by will, adoption by trust. So through estate planning, you can make somebody part of your family for inheritance purposes. Now, not for other purposes like, you know, receiving Social Security or things like that, but for receiving your property, your estate, you can do estate planning that makes somebody legally part of your family to inherit from you. Kind of cool, huh? I think so. So, California, person said, I recently moved my family to California to move into my grandmother's house to take care of her because she has Alzheimer's. My aunt and cousin were originally caretaking, and when I arrived at the house, it was filthy, had stuff everywhere and infested with bugs. The house had no good food and no hot water while my grandma was living in it. Now my aunt won't help take care of her at all, and I'm left to clean up the house, make all the repairs, and take care of my grandma. My aunt and I are not on good terms, but I want to fight for my grandma because she was in a dangerous living condition. I don't want the house taken from us because we would be homeless. The house is in a trust for my mom and my aunt after grandma passes. My mom mentioned we could buy my aunt's half of the house if she allows it. What typically happens? There's nothing typical that happens here. Either they agree to terms and they're bought out, or not. Says, I'm not sure what to do, and grandma does not have the funds to go into a home. So it sounds like when grandma dies, this person's mother and her aunt will inherit the house. After that point, the question then becomes, what happens to the people that moved in to take care of grandma? Well, they might be able to make a claim against the trust for caregiving, but that's kind of tenuous. I would tell this person, you know, when your grandmother dies, unless your mother decides she's going to receive her half of the property, get it sold, and then give you some money so you can have money to go and get another place to live, you're pretty much not going to have any rights at all once this gets sorted out. That's just the way it is. Unfortunately, that kind of thing happens all the time, all over the place. So I have a short amount of time left in the show today, and I thought I just wanted to reiterate to everyone out there that I have a new estate planning webinar that's aimed at individuals, people who are unmarried, widowed, divorced, in registered domestic partnerships, or just a cohabitating unmarried couple, or someone who is married but has separate assets that they want to separately plan for from the marriage because they want to leave them to different people, or they want to make provision for a spouse with their separate property but then have it pass on to their children or other heirs when the spouse dies. So it's called the Living Trust Webinar, Estate Planning, a Living Trust Webinar for Individuals. And it's everything's available on my website at lawbob.com/webinars. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show and you learned some things. I'll be back next Monday with more Plan Your Estate Radio. Until then, have a great week, Bay Area, and we'll see you next Monday. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.